This session is on outlining, and I want to make sure that we really are all using the same kind of outline, so when we look at one another's sermon outlines and exegetical outlines, we'll be able to kind of have the same standard, all right? When we're talking about outlining, we're talking about seeing your message as a whole. So the idea, the goal here, is to get to a homiletical outline where on one page you can see the whole sermon. So you can kind of compare this and that with it and all that, and then you'll be able to hopefully be clearer, be better in your presentation of what the Scripture says. We're kind of camping down here on the structure part, step six of the expository sermons process. We'll be here for a couple more sessions because this is a very, where we really need the most help. This is on homiletical outline here, number seven of Haddon Robinson's step. And the other class is following this same pattern here. They're just using the white here. Next week we'll talk about clarity and the introduction and conclusion and hopefully fill out what we mean here by structure. Speaking as sermon structure, what are the two key questions that you're going to ask to determine your sermon structure? Where's the main idea? And where's the application? Good, Pam. So where's the main idea? And what are our two options? Where are you going to put the main idea? You really have...
Inductive
or deductive? So inductive means what?
Idea.
Right. So inductive, you're just kind of raising some other issues, but you're not telling everybody right up front what your main idea is. And then the other, of course, is deductive. So you're stating it right at the beginning. We had some difference of opinion in regard to last Thursday's sermon. Oh, I see. Yes, some of you didn't even like the four choices I had. So you said inductive, deductive. You made your own little... Natalie, you're right. You're right. I should actually put a fifth one there, the inductive, deductive. But yeah, I think you guys are, I'd have to hear the sermon again to find out whether it was actually, whether he actually did state the whole central idea of the message at the beginning. Some of you heard it, so it must have been there and the rest of us missed it. Anyway, it should be clear to you when you're preparing your sermon where you're going to put your main idea. Are you going to kind of give all the goods away right here, right at the beginning? That's a very clear way to preach. Or are you going to wait till the end? And as we saw before, where is the application is the other question. And so you will, I think in a general sense, if you have a short passage or you have a short message, probably simple is good. You kind of give the main idea, and then you apply it. Whereas cyclical often works better if you've got longer messages. I've been preaching a lot of cyclical messages because my sermons are covering the whole book of the Bible. And I don't want to, and my sermons have been 45 minutes to an hour or longer, and I don't want to go more than like 20 minutes without any application. So I'm trying to apply as I go along and help people see how these books do really apply to them. So that results in these four structures: simple, inductive, cyclical, inductive, simple, deductive, cyclical, deductive. This is not including having a message that is an inductive, deductive message. But even when you have an inductive, deductive message where you're giving the central idea at the end of the message, you might say the middle of the message, it's still, you're waiting on it and you're giving it later. Maybe you just have more of the message left over on a simple inductive, an inductive deductive message. We talked about the importance of having skeletons. We realize that the skeletons are very, very necessary for bodies, for horses or dogs or people. And we know that a sermon outline is important. But why is it important? Is it important to you? Why is it important to you? Clevy, why would you say it's important to you?
As a preacher?
Yeah.
As a preacher and or probably more even as a listener, when you hear someone speaking, what does it do to you to have some basic outline?
It's like a mind map.
A mind map.
Like, I know where to go. Next.
Which distinguishes central idea, the big ideas from the small ideas?
Is that... Like, I know where I'm going.
Okay, you don't mean the technical term of mind map, where we have the central idea in the middle of the page?
A mental map.
A mental map, yeah. Good. Okay, Winston, why is it important to you?
It means audience can follow easily.
Okay. So it's a sermon's easier to follow if you have some kind of outline of what the preacher's doing. Good. Ladies? Other?
Yeah, I don't like having an outline if I'm listening to a sermon.
You don't like having an outline when you listen to a sermon? That's, do you know what? That's so easy to solve. You take the bulletin and you sit on it. You stick it in your Bible and you... That's so easy to solve. Now, if it's up on the PowerPoint, then you just close your eyes. Now, if you're not, if you're sitting on it and you're closing your eyes, you're probably going to fall asleep, though. But you do have that option. You do have that option. My wife doesn't like lots of PowerPoint. Can you believe that? Imagine that. And we've got a good marriage still, you know? So she's always got her head down when I'm preaching. She's always taking, she takes more notes than I actually give her. You know, she writes more notes than I do. But her head's down. She doesn't particularly like to look at the PowerPoint. She likes to just listen. I figure, sweetheart, you want to keep your head down? That's fine with me. You do have these options. So, other thoughts?
Yeah. What happens if they say pastor or preacher to follow the outline?
What happens if he doesn't follow?
He can get the message across, but not this kind of outline.
Well, generally, he's going to confuse his people if he preaches a different outline than the outline he gives. Sometimes my thinking about a passage has developed since I printed out the outline for everybody. But even in those cases, I would say, you know, on that second point, I state it this way, but I think it actually probably better to say it this way. So I feel a need to kind of clarify that. Otherwise, people are a bit confused on it. Here's some other thoughts. It shows the whole sermon at once to see if it flows naturally. These are all on page 61 of your notes. So you can look at the whole sermon and say, now, and this is what I'll do on your assignment. I'll say, where's he going with the introduction? Okay, he says he's raising a question in the introduction, and he says there's two answers to that question. I'm looking for a two-point sermon. Sometimes a student will say, here's where I'm going, there's 2 points, and then there's 3 points to follow. I'm going, no, I'm confused. You confuse me. And then I also look at the top of that line. Does it flow naturally? You ask a question, why we should do this. Then I look at the bottom of the page and I go, is it answered? And the bottom of the page says, the way to do this is da-da-da. Oh, okay. That doesn't flow. You told me why we're going to do this, and now you're telling me how we do something. So, unless there's some kind of transition in the middle where you're shifting to a how question, which would make it more like an inductive-deductive message. It clarifies superior from inferior points. Maybe this is what you're getting at in terms of a mind map. I want to know the big issues. If we're talking about how we speak to non-Christians, and you're going to say there's two different ways that this passage gives, you're helping the listener go, okay, I want to find those two things. I'm not looking for four ways to do this or four reasons to do this or whatever. You're setting the superior from the inferior points. And you'll be talking about each one of those things, but at least the listener will understand what are the big ones and the small ones. Why would you want to bring up the...
Inferior.
You don't really want to emphasize the inferior points much. But you're going to be saying something about those major points. And hopefully the idea is that they'll support that. And I'll talk about that in a minute. It also helps you put your parts in proper order. Did any of you change the order of the way you're going to preach Colossians 4:6 from the way it was in the passage? You'll see when I give you my outline I did change it. I say, let's read this whole passage. Let your speech be with grace, seasoned as it were with salt, so that you may know how to respond to each person. So I say in the introduction, do you want to know how to respond to each person? I certainly do. I want to get to the end of the verse. I want that. And this passage tells me, before we get to the end of it, it tells me there's two ways we can speak to people. So let's look at those two ways in this sermon. You catch what I'm saying? I'm not actually preaching the passage in that same way, the same order that we've got. And seeing it in outline form helps clarify that. And an outline also shows where you need supporting material. So I'll do this. I'll put it on an outline, and I'll go, you know, I've got 2 points. I've got 3 illustrations for the first point, but I don't have any illustrations on the second point. And seeing an outline helps me realize, ooh, I'm going to go for 10 minutes on that second point without any illustrations? Ooh, I think I'm going to lose my people. I think I need to strengthen that part. Maybe I'll take one of those illustrations out from the first one and think of another illustration on the second point. Did you catch what I'm saying? So seeing an outline form, it helps me to balance it out a bit more. Any other thoughts on why an outline is important? This is for both the speaker and the listeners. Why would it be important? If it's important for the speaker, then it should be important for the listeners. If you've got something that's super, super important to you, but it's not very important to the listeners, I don't know about that.
Like a good outline would have to preach a clear sermon.
Yes.
It benefits the listener.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean the listener the outline.
Right.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, your goal is not for people to walk out of church with your outline memorized.
Right.
Your goal is, well, Paul said it well in 1 Timothy 1. He said the goal of our instruction is love, which stems from a pure heart. And that's a good reminder. Wow, Paul, why are you writing 1 Timothy? I want people to love one another like God does, you know? It's a great, great goal. All right, so you don't want people to just see the skeleton, okay? So how can you help listeners see the skeleton of your message without taking the skin off? You want it to have skeleton, and I appreciate all of you bringing your skeletons with you today, as I would hate to see any of you without a skeleton. And some messages are like that. You just see all kinds of blobs of hair and cartilage and all that. And you don't really get any kind of sense of where it's going. So let's do this, all right? So how do you do it? How to outline correctly, page 61. First of all, distinguish your ideas. It should be pretty clear to you one idea from another idea. Okay? To go with the one that you're familiar with, on page 49, how can you speak, well, no, this is actually for your assignment. How can you speak to non-Christians properly? You want to distinguish subordinate ideas from superior ideas, right? So you'll see that A and B, these are subordinate to the main points. Speak graciously. Speak wise words. By putting them on an outline, you understand the other things that you're going to say are actually hopefully support the idea of gracious speech. By the way, do you see what's wrong with this one on the top?
There's no B.
There's an A, but there's no B. Yeah. So don't do that. I did do it on my little outline from last Thursday's sermon. I was trying to think of something else here, but anyway.
Out of curiosity, why is that?
The reason we don't do that is because it's because
if this is supporting the idea, then it's in essence, and it's the only thing you're going to say about it, and it's in essence saying the same thing as speaking graciously. If you're going to develop the idea of speaking graciously, then you're going to say maybe more than one thing about it. Well, maybe you don't agree with that. I mean, I could say, speak graciously, and then say one thing about it.
Yeah.
Say, speak graciously means to have a amicable spirit as you talk to people. Now, it also says, speak wise words. That would be like stating one idea. This is not the conventional way. I could also say that. In outlining, is this your first time to be taught on how to do outlining?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At least
two. Yeah, you need to have at least two.
So if it's only one point, like what should say?
If it's only one point, it should be...
Just the main point.
It should be in the main point. Let's say... To speak graciously means to talk in a harmonious way. If that's all I'm going to say, I can just say, speak in a harmonious way as the main point. But when I say speak graciously, I'm going to say maybe on point A, speak harmoniously, and then I'm probably going to illustrate it. What does it mean to speak in a harmonious way? Well, let me tell you two different things. I'm going to say the same thing to you twice. First way, harsh. Second way, nice. You know, but I'm actually saying the same words. You know? Shut the door. Oh, shut that door. You know, I'm saying the same thing, exact same words. But the first one, I'm being gracious. Oh, shut the door. The second one, oh, shut the door, you know, is not so gracious. You know, God wants me to be gracious.
If I want to attach an illustration to explain or further illustrate gracious,
yeah.
Where should I indicate?
If you want to attach an illustration, put it as probably point A would be saying what you're saying, you're explaining it, and point B would be illustrating it or applying it. Clay?
Okay, how if... okay, sermon outline, you have to change the main points to make it concise and catchy, right?
Yeah. Keep your points
what
short.
What if you like reword to making it a catchy statement and then the point isn't there? So then you put the A, this is the point, explain. Like example, like be gracious. A is like speak with grace.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's
with grace, yeah.
No, I'm just saying it's just one point. Because that's what the text.
I think because with the way that I've been thinking about your format, the main point is supposed to be short and it like grab people's attention.
Yes, make it.
But then you
short.
May want to elaborate on it a little bit more.
Right.
But only need one point to do that. At which point it would only be A, it wouldn't be
yeah.
A, B. But it's because of, like, unless you wanted to just do the explanation in the main point. I guess that's,
yeah.
No, because I was I had this problem where I was trying to think about like, oh, I only need one point to explain this. But then I was like, oh, but then
I need
like I need two points. do I just make up another point? Or like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm arguing here for the conventional way to outline, not just in terms of biblical studies, but just all outlining. And I don't, I guess I'm not prepared to answer your question super clearly, except to say that if you've got something else to say that relates to that, you can do it all in one point. All right? This is a presupposing that you remember the session on explain, prove, and apply your developmental points. So I want you to think in terms of the developmental points as you think of subpoints. I better explain that. Well, some people may not think that gracious, being gracious is really right. Should we always be gracious, really? I think there's a time not to be gracious. Perhaps one of your people in your audience is going, no, you don't. If the house is burning down, you're not gracious. You go and you just grab your children. You don't, you grab people out. You don't care about being gracious. You care about something else. You know what I mean? I mean, you're trying to think in terms of objections that people might have. So you want to prove what Paul's saying. He's saying always be gracious. Really? Was Jesus always gracious? I mean, there's just 1,000 issues you can raise up here. Does Matthew 23 gracious? You whitewashed tombs, you brood of vipers, John the Baptist said. So anyway. All right, but the point here is that subordinate ideas are derived from other more important idea or support that idea. So here's what I wrote here. Each subordinate point, that is to say the subpoint, should directly and logically amplify, explain, illustrate, or apply the larger heading under which it comes. Never is there only one subordinate point under a superior point. I give an illustration here on page 55 is an example where we have that. Dr. Sanukian puts on page, he has it three times, where he has a subpoint A, so he's not following this rule here. He's just making some maybe funny comment or something like that that relates to it. But the more proper way to do it would be at the top of 55 to say, I've discovered another phrase that I've attempted to use. And then maybe he should, on point A, state Psalm 16, verse 6a. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. You know, is that what it says? And then he says, oh, I've often thought I'd give this to my wife to use as she stands before the mirror, you know. Honey, you look nice, or something like that, you know. You could make that actually two different points. And
so it's just a convention.
It's just a convention, yeah. And so let's not belabor that anymore, okay? So you really should have two points here. And normally you're not going to say, well, I only have one thing to say about this anyway. Because you're going to want to explain, prove, or apply it in some way. So we call those A and B, we call those coordinate points. And others have equal importance or equal weight. So subordinate points are subordinate to the main point, but they're also coordinate to one another. All right? Whereas the main points we would call the superior points. Now notice about superior points here. Superior ideas summarize the content of their subpoints. They include all of the content of their subordinate points. Ultimately, the sermon is the main idea, that's a big idea, is the most superior point under which everything else supports. But let's take a look at how to do that. Let's suppose we have this one. How does that look to you? Point one, verse five, and then A and B are six and seven. Is that correct? Why is it incorrect? It should be
5 to 7.
And if it's 5 to 7, where are you going to be talking about 5? It's really got a couple problems, doesn't it? You would have to have something like this. 5 to 7, and then a subpoint A is going to be just verse 5, and then B, you've got 6 and 7 together. You could say A, B, C, 5, 6, 7, something like that.
Do you always have to break up the verses into one point?
On an exegetical outline, you should have parentheses at the end of every one of these statements to show that you're actually getting it from the passage. But you don't have to have verse 5, verse 6, verse 7. You may be thinking of, you know, especially when you're talking about longer passages, verses 6 to 14 are all one point, and you're not, because that's one whole story or one whole unit. All right? Now, we all know about platforms. If you saw a platform like this out in the ocean, would you look at this and you go, wow, that looks like a lot of weight. That's amazing how that just sort of floats right in the water there. You wouldn't do that at all, right? Because you're smart enough to realize that the platforms, that there's actually stuff extending down below that you don't see. I think the same thing could be said in regard to a sermon idea. It's as if your main idea is what you've got up on the platform. Well, you know there's pilings that go on down, and they go all the way down into the bottom of the ocean floor. Maybe one piling will have, maybe one of the pillars would have two pilings that go all the way down, another one had four, another one would have three. You don't see all that, but you know that all of those are absolutely necessary for the platform to exist. So I'm illustrating it as if our three pillars are three main points, some which have 2 points, some which have 4 points, etc. Under the subpoints, it's okay if these are not seen. Don't be like one of my professors who said, now we're on point number 2, subpoint C, subpoint A, and where we last class session we ended with point 2. Did y'all get that? It's we're on the point 2 under the subpoint. I remember sitting there as a student, I remember thinking, why don't you just give us structured notes and say we're right at the bottom of page 42 or something? You know, not so necessary to do that. Obviously, especially when you're preaching in the church, you're going to lose your audience if you belabor all these little subpoints, you know. We should also have consistent symbols in this course. You want to change it afterwards, you're fine to do it when you're preaching. But I want us to use the same structure here. So we're going to use Roman numerals, capital Roman numerals for main points, capital Arabic letters for major subpoints, and then we go on down from there. We alternate between numbers and letters. All right? Roman numeral, capitals, and then small ones. We will also use different symbols for the introduction and the conclusion. So in your outline, you write out the word introduction. So we know where your introduction begins. You probably have some stuff above that, your name and some other stuff maybe. We want to know where it actually begins, and we want to know when your conclusion begins. And under those, you don't put Roman numerals. So that way, we'll be able to look at a page and we'll say, oh, this is a 2-point message, or this is a 3-point message, this is a 4-point message. And the student has developed this briefly or this briefly. So follow this format. Don't misplace your points. We've got these points over here or there, whatever, you know. Your outline can also include transitions. I would like you to do this to show when you're transitioning from one point to the next. You say speak graciously, and then when you have a transition, put it in parentheses. Well, what's the second way to speak to non-Christians properly? So a lot of times your transitions will be rhetorical questions, you know, and you go on into your point. Inductive parentheses can be used as well, as we saw in the Acts 6 simple inductive outline. When church problems arise, how should we solve them? You'll see that the major point here is actually a one in parentheses. That may look kind of funny to you. Why would you put a point like that in parentheses? Well, the reason is because you're actually skipping over that as you speak. Logically, that's a bigger point. The apostle solved the problem of growth with lay leadership. That's your bigger point, but that's not what you're actually saying first. You're going to get there. You're going right on into the subpoints. And then when you get to they designated lay leaders of verses 2 to 6, you're essentially giving the exegetical idea that functions as your first main point.
Do you want us to do that?
Yeah, I want you to do this. If you're not going to be going right on in, if you're going to be stating a point inductively, most of us will state our points deductively. That's a clear way to speak, to say, here's a question, here's the answer. Now let me support the answer. Use full ideas as well. All right, on page 62. Make sure your points deal with full ideas, not fragments. Write every point in the sermon, no matter how small, in a grammatically complete sentence. Please do this. I'm not a mind reader, and neither are your listeners. When you say church growth problems, what? What is that? Their lay leadership, growing food leaders. What? 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 I don't understand. You don't want people to be looking at your... You don't speak that way. I don't talk to you like that, right? Say full... Great. I don't talk like that with single words, you know, spread out. I communicate ideas, and you do in full sentence as well. So this is how you can do it. You can do it clearly. It's better with full sentences. When church problems arise, we should solve them with lay leadership. And then each one of these statements is actually a grammatically correct sentence. Short. Shorter the better. But they should be grammatical. So use only full ideas. A grammatically complete sentence. Avoid a title or a phrase. Don't say, this sermon is about the work of God, or maybe your first point is the work of God. And avoid sentences equivalent to a phrase. In verses 1 to 2, Paul discusses the word of God. Your people will go, okay, discusses the word of God. What does he say about the word of God? I don't quite get it. It's basically saying a sentence fragment, but it's writing it in a full sentence. Two features of salvation are described. It just begs the question, okay, well, why aren't you telling me what those are? Each point should be a declarative or imperative sentence, not a question. Your transition should be a question, and then your main point will be answering that question. And people will, but they can't handle writing the question out and writing the answer. Or even if you just say, oh, here's a big question. You will say maybe a big question at the beginning of your sermon. Here's a question I want you to think about. We're going to talk about answer this today. But then your main points would be answers to that question. So each point should be a single idea as well. Avoid the complex and compound sentences. So what I suggest you do is you go and make each point as short as possible by deleting every unnecessary word. I'm actually doing that right now through the whole Bible. I have 2,000 pages of outline of the Bible in my Old Testament and New Testament survey course. I'm going through, when I actually did this, it's developed over the years. A lot of my points are 3 lines long. And I read them and I have to reread them because I'm trying to include everything kind of in that passage. Now, as I get older, I'm getting simpler. So I'm actually going through the whole Bible, book by book, and then I'm shortening all of my sentences and then I'm uploading them as separate books of the Bible.
Sorry, why not question?
question, why not have a question? Because what you want on your main points is you want something that people can answer, comprehend in terms of subject and complement. You'll be speaking more clearly that way.
So in my Colossians 4:6, I said, like, how do you converse with grace? Or how, what does conversing season itself look like?
Uh-huh. What you're going to be more clear if you will state it logically like that. If you want to ask the question and then answer it later, state logically the question and the answer up in the main point, but put them in parentheses. Then you're developing that point inductively. You can do it that way, but show me the logical development of the passage, so that won't have questions in your main points. Here's another thing, and I want to let you guys go, take a break. Put repeated phrases or words within the main main points into the subject. What do I mean by that? How can you face trials is your subject. And then you say, well, in your trials at work, trust God as a main point. All right? Second main point, in your trials at work, seek counsel. To see the main idea, in your trials at work, trust God and seek counsel. It may look really clear, and you say, well, look at that. You've got the repetition. That's good. Repetition's good. This sermon's about trials at work. It's true. It's about trials at work. But especially if people are trying to write down what your main points are, there's no need for it to be so long. So how would you change it? How would you be more clear here? So what would you? How would you start the sermon? How would you make it better?
How can you face trials at work?
Good. How can you face trials at work? So you're taking the idea, the repeated phrase or the words, you're putting that up into the subject. Okay, today we're talking about trials at work. How do we actually address those? This passage says two things, okay? First of all, trust God. Don't get all fret about it, you know. Secondly, well, how else can you face trials at work? There's my transition. Seek counsel. Other people can help you face trials at work. So you end up actually with this, with basically a Q&A in your conclusion. Okay, today, how can you face trials at work? That's what we've been talking about today. What have we seen? Trust God. Seek counsel. And the listener's going to go, oh, okay, which one of those two do I need to do? And you help them as a speaker. You say, which one of those two do you need to do? Do you need to right now just say, Lord, I'm giving this over to you? Then you're applying your first main point. Or do you say, do you need some perspective? Do you need to talk to someone about this? Maybe you need to seek counsel. Who can you talk to about your trials at work that can help you? Do you see what I'm saying? When the main idea is very succinct like that, the application is quite easy.
Trust God, is it in full sentence?
That's a full sentence, trust God. It's a short sentence. You can't get, well, you can get shorter than that. You can have a one-word sentence.
So it must be a sentence, but
worship. That's a one-word sentence.
It cannot be just a word because it doesn't. It can be anything, right?
It can be a word if it is a command. How do we trust God at work? Worship. That would be an imperative with one word. But generally, you're not going to have a one-word one. Clevy, your thought.
The main idea of the second column. Shouldn't it be trust God and seek counsel when you face trials?
You could say trust God and seek counsel when you, but I wouldn't put the word when, because when is talking about the time that you face trials at work. But I find it's easier just to remind people of the subject, and they've got that subject in mind. Oh, this is the issue that I'm facing right now. So what do I need to do? Trust God, seek counsel. Then it drives it home a bit better. For example, what are the characteristics of a true, of a certain kind of, a true disciple of Jesus? He follows Jesus, and he helps others follow Jesus. That would be reviewing the two sub-point, the two main points. But people already have the idea, oh, this whole sermon's about this whole idea. Follow Jesus and then help other people become fishers of men, you know, something like that. Right. So qualities of good sermon outline, unity, balance. So your whole sermon's not just, whoa, way over on point two, movement, etc. G, place the main idea properly. So in an inductive message, you're going to have that main idea at the end of the message, all right? In a deductive message, you're going to shift it on up to the beginning. Speak graciously and wisely to unbelievers. Speak graciously, speak wise words, all right? We all have different ideas as to how much we want to put on our sermon outline. This is an older one that I used to use for my church. I actually give a little more detail than this now, maybe about the same amount now. I want my people to, I want clarity. I want to be very clear as to what God's expecting of them, how they actually apply the message. Some people don't like sermon outlines. They don't have to look at them, but at least they have the option there. Now, how do you convert the EO to the HO? Go for the passage outline to the sermon outline. We looked at Matthew 18. We saw that verses 15 to 17 are talking about the manner. 18 to 20 are talking about the reason. That doesn't mean you have to start your sermon talking about the reason. Ultimately, you need to be talking about the reason, because that's what the passage is talking about. But you don't have to introduce the subject. You can introduce main point one. How do we restore sinning Christians properly? It's okay to do it that way. When I preach Matthew 18, this is how I do it. Then I tell them, keep the matter as private as possible. But then I have a big transition. Why do we do that? Why do we have to keep matters as private as possible? Why do we even restore? Why do we continue to seek to restore people? You know, you ever thought about why would all this be so important? I make a bigger transition of that. The focus of the passage is the why question. Jesus actually answers the why here. He says, our church extends God's authority. Think about it. And I'm moving to where I'm actually, when I get to the main idea, we must restore, I think I would shorten that to say, restore sinning members because we act for God. I'm going to shorten that a bit. This is inductive. What kind of inductive is it? Is it simple inductive or is it cyclical inductive? Am I applying as I go? I am. I'm going to tell you on point one, this is how to keep the matter private, okay? Let me tell you how do you do that. You don't talk to your wife about it. I had something last week that was big news, but I said, can I talk to my wife about it? And he said, no. I said, she really, really, I mean, she knows how to keep her mouth shut better than anybody I know. And he said, no, please don't talk to her about it. And I love talking to Susan just about everything, but I have to just, honestly, I have to wait till tomorrow. So I only have to wait 1 week on it. And then tomorrow we'll be able to talk more about this. Anyway, so this is cyclical inductive. So I'm applying as I go through.
So that means for inductive, we don't have to state the subject. Go right to point one.
Exactly. Very good, Peng. You don't have to state the subject. You could state your first main... You could introduce the first main point. You could... The basic idea is you're just not stating your main idea to the end. You're doing other things at the beginning of your sermon. You want to vary your sermon so everything doesn't sound the same. I need to work on this. Dr. Desmond's very good about this. And he'll help you guys, I hope, in the homiletics too, to learn how to better do that. Okay, I thought this was going to be a short session, but it ends up being a bit longer. but it's good for us to be able to, good for us to be able to address these matters. And I thank you for your questions, because I hope that helps us be able to do this better.